Hello everybody, my name is Lady Curious, aka Curious Raven. I know that I have a lot more subscribers, so I kinda want to introduce myself. On my other channel, I mainly do narration where I just read the person's story. So with this channel, I really would like to talk to y'all like you're one of my friends. I used to be a correctional officer in a men's prison, and have had to deal with rapists, murderers, all criminals of the sort. To be honest, some of these people talk like a normal person. You would never know that your cashier at the grocery store or your neighbor is a serial killer. You just have to be mindful that there are really bad people out there. Before I start this, I do need to tell you that this video is for educational and documentary purposes only. Please be nice to people in the comments. When I was doing this case, I've been kind of researching it for weeks. I will do one true crime case a month because I deep dive on a lot of things. This is about a young girl who loved life that was hunted by a true monster in plain sight. Aliana DeFries was only 14 years old. She was born to the parents of Damon DeFries and Donisha Cooper. She was born in Ohio on January 27th, 2002. At this time, she went to school at E-Prep and Village Prep Woodland Hills and was in the 7th grade. She would visit on the weekends with her father, Damon, and her stepmother, Tanya, in Cleveland. She lived during the school week with her mother, Donisha Cooper, Tim Tinsley, her mom's boyfriend, and her little brother, Brandon Tinsley, who was 2 years old. Aliana was described by her loved ones as a happy and bubbly, very non-confrontational and quiet girl. She seemed younger than her age. With her maturity level, she would play with children younger than herself. She loved playing with Barbie dolls, loved movies like Finding Nemo, Frozen, and anything Glitz. Allie's favorite color is purple. She wasn't the typical teenager. She was sent to Village Prep School because she needed more individual attention due to her IEP than what a normal public school could provide. She also suffered from developmental disability and was enrolled in special education classes. Aliana's mental capacity was younger than that of a 14-year-old, and she required daily medication. An IEP stands for Individualized Educational Plan. This means that she was below average in reading comprehension skills and other subjects. She struggled retaining less than the average student could. Her father stated he was not happy about her taking two buses to get to school. And her mother, she was very iffy. When she talked to the principal at the time, the principal reassured her that Aliana would be safe, so they went ahead and put her in that school. The other person in this case today is named Christopher Whittaker. He was born in 1973 and is native to Fayetteville, Tennessee. Whittaker's mother died of kidney failure when he was only 8 years old. After this, his life was void of a positive father figure. His father was mostly absent, but he was close with his father's parents. Whittaker was among seven siblings. His older sister took on the mother role and moved her siblings to live with a great aunt in Cleveland to avoid protective services from taking them. Literally overnight, his whole world turned upside down. A social worker named Cece McDonald, the defense's mitigation expert, testified. This was during court she was explaining all this. Shortly after the family moved to Cleveland, Mount Pleasant neighborhood, Whittaker's oldest sister, boyfriend, began to physically abuse her and verbally abuse Whittaker. Seeing his sister suffer beatings made Whittaker feel helpless to protect her and likely desensitized him to violence. Eric Summers is Whittaker's brother, only older by 4 years, and he testified that Whittaker was a loner and was very attached to his mother before her death. Christopher Whittaker went to Guardville High School, where he was known as Chris Summers. For some weird reason, he changed his last name. Former classmates describe him as creepy and aggressive, but say they would not have guessed he would be a sexual predator. Eric Summers testified that he got involved in dealing drugs and tried to shield his younger brother from that activity, but was unsuccessful. He also said he tried to get Whittaker a job, and he also said that the rest of his family tried to get him help before his whole life unraveled. Their efforts failed. He turned to drugs in the streets, where he became loosely affiliated with the Folks Street Gang, which is an offshoot of the Gangster Disciples. He was arrested for criminal trespass in 1996, for stealing a car in 1999, and probation violation in 2000. He then picked up his first crime of violence in 2005, when he choked a woman unconscious, raped her, and stabbed her in the neck with a pair of scissors. He served only 4 years in prison. Only 4 years for stabbing someone in the neck with scissors. She did survive. According to the victim, Whittaker asked to use her restroom and came out armed with a pair of scissors before assaulting her. What is shocking to me is that Whittaker is a father and grandfather. His children were Alexis, 19, Isaiah, 18, Daisha, 15, Tiara, 26. Y'all, he had a child of his own close to Aliana's age. This man is disgusting. At this time, Whittaker states he has an addiction to crack for many years, and he also had to take anger management classes when he was younger. This is the steps in the investigation. Aliana went missing on her way to school on Cleveland's east side in January 2017. She would take the RTA bus to school, which her mother and grandmother, especially her father, did not like. Though the fact that one stop was in front of a police station made them feel better about her means of transportation. Her mother said she was not the one to cut school or rarely miss days of school. Her mother said that when she called to cancel her IEP meeting with the school that day, she was informed that Aliana never showed up to school that day. She then realized that it was past 4 p.m. and Aliana was not home. This was when her mom started to panic and called the police. That day, Aliana forgot her phone in her room. This would explain why her mother could not reach her. The only electronic device she had was a cell phone. She could only listen to music or play games on, but it didn't have any cell service. The teachers at school that same day, when everyone realized Aliana went missing, they started to canvass the whole area with flyers and searched for her. Sunday, the school was opened as a home base for people to gather so the community could canvass more area and search more for her. Aliana went missing on Thursday, and by Monday, they found her. Her principal, Miss Squire, had to call fellow staff and break the news. And on Wednesday, she had a difficult burden informing Aliana's peers. Miss Squires did describe that Aliana had a wonderful smile and a very sweet girl, but she could be somewhat gullible, and she tried hard to fit in. The police called for reinforcement from other districts to come search for Aliana the same day that she went missing. A police officer named Lang contacted the medical examiner, hospital, and detention center to make sure she was not in the hands of one of these places, but no luck. So since this did not work, this particular officer specialized in locating missing persons or would take the missing persons reports. He stated that missing person follow-ups went to detective, and the detective that got Aliana's case was Detective Callahan. The officer, before passing it over to the detective, he looked up all CCTV that would have tracked Aliana. They tried pinging the cell phone Aliana had, but real quick they figured out it had no service because a woman that did not know Aliana answered the phone. The number was reassigned to a stranger. This was a letdown. Then the police officer passed all information to the night shift. A witness named Joshua Poole, a high schooler in the ninth grade at the time, took the same bus as Aliana that day. He would talk to Aliana every day. He considered her his friend. Joshua gets off the bus after Aliana does. They would only have a 10-minute ride together. CCTV showed this interaction, and it showed that Joshua got off on a different stop than Aliana. So Joshua was crossed off as being a suspect. He also told police that Aliana told him she might stop at McDonald's before school, but when they went to go look for that tape at McDonald's, unfortunately, they only had CCTV inside but not on the outside. And when Detective Callahan went to look at this CCTV from McDonald's, he didn't see her at all. He searched from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. and she never was seen entering McDonald's. Detective Callahan also said that officers searched all through the night. And that Thursday, there was an official missing persons case report filed at 4:30 p.m. on Aliana. Detective Callahan received many tips, and some were busts. Some he had to follow up on, like one of Aliana's family members reached out, named Ariel Bell. She is the niece of Aliana's father. She told him a tip that made him want to investigate into an ex-boyfriend of Aliana's mother, named Thomas Daniels. Daniels was already a registered sex offender, and he lived at a homeless shelter at the time. And that she thought Daniels contacted Aliana 2 weeks prior to this incident. Detective Callahan reached out to Aliana's mother, Miss Cooper, stated she had no contact with Daniels for a long time. Detective Callahan went to the homeless shelter and interviewed Daniels himself. Daniels said no, he did not have any contact with Aliana or her mother. Daniels stated he was a bus driver for the city, and this was confirmed that he was at work and had a solid alibi for the time Aliana went missing. They marked Thomas Daniels off the suspect list. The next thing that they did in the investigation was searched the house of Aliana's mother. They did not find any evidence there. He then interviewed Aliana's dad and stepmom. Officer Perkins was assigned to the endangered missing persons case as Detective Callahan's partner. Detective Callahan went and viewed the CCTV of bus line 14, Aliana's bus, and other bus lines in the surrounding area, because these buses have inside footage and they also have exterior footage rolling at all times. So if there's like a bus across the street from her bus stop, maybe that bus saw something. So he was just trying to find any type of cameras throughout the area. After many officers and Detective Callahan reviewed all the CCTV footage, they said they did notice something. They discovered an adult male who exited the bus the same time Aliana did. He then followed her and appeared on the outside of the bus on the camera, you could see that he was kind of, I would say, about 10 feet from her. She was walking across a crosswalk, and you could tell that he said something to her, and she kind of looked back and said something back to him. The male was described to be African-American, wearing all white, but he definitely had a white hoodie on, and he was carrying a small black square bag and seemed very shady in his movements as he followed Aliana. What I mean by this is he kind of had his head down a little bit in the footage. Unfortunately, I've looked. I don't have access to the footage. I just want to explain exactly what he was doing. In the video, Detective Callahan saw that on the right-hand side of Aliana walking, there was a gas station. And so he went to the convenience store to see if they had any cameras. And usually Aliana had to cross the street on her way to school, but the gas station footage did not show her crossing the street. So whatever happened to her happened right there at the crosswalk. The Cleveland Police Department put so much manpower into this search for the sweet child. That is why they asked Agent Burke from the FBI to help them further. According to a witness, Whitaker grabbed her as she walked along East 93rd Avenue. The witness did not contact the police because he was unsure of the relationship between Aliana and Whitaker. Surveillance video then shows Whitaker leading Aliana through a field in the direction where they found her in an abandoned house. After they found Aliana, it was passed off to a crime scene investigator, and he has been with the police department for 22 years. He processed the scene by taking pictures and collecting evidence. Everything they collect is sent to a lab for processing. How they found Aliana, that finally on Sunday night, they decided to go house to house and search abandoned houses to see if they could find her, and they did. They found a female naked in an abandoned house on January 29th at nighttime. When the scene was photographed, they found a blood drag mark going into the dining room. Then the drag mark leads into a bedroom. In the far right of the dining room, they found tools, a bag, a backpack on a sitting area. They also found blood on a window seat and a lot more blood on the floor in front of the window seat. Throughout the house, they found bloody shoe prints on the floor. Only one set, keep that in mind. The blood drag mark continued to the bedroom. They stated they found a black sweater of Aliana's that was torn and seemed that it got cut off of her. They also found a blue training bra at the scene. Aliana's school tie had blood on it, but her undergarments did not. They found one black slide-on shoe and her school bag. They found her naked, only wearing socks, and crumpled up in a corner of the bedroom. I want to say this is a trigger warning to anyone that is not okay of hearing gruesome acts done to a child. It was later discovered that the box cutter was used to slash Aliana's neck, while the drill had been used to put 4 puncture wounds into her cheek, as well as a wound on her forehead that dislodged her right eyeball from the socket. Because many of the wounds showed signs that they had started healing, they were inflicted on her several hours before she died. Aliana appeared as if she had been dragged and thrown into the room. An autopsy was performed by the county by Dr. David Dunlack, revealed that she suffered wounds caused by tools found in the house, including a drill, a screwdriver, and a box cutter. She had so many injuries, and her injuries were so severe that he could not identify which one caused her death. But Ultimately, she did die from stab wounds and blunt force injuries, which all of them were severe. They also took blood sample and they found the perp's semen inside of her. So they know that she was raped. Now I'm going to take you through what really happened that day. That morning, it showed Aliana exiting a bus while surveillance video from a business shows her crossing East 93rd Street. You know, that street I said where she was crossing the crosswalk and stopped to see what Whittaker was saying. She was then stopped outside the True Gospel Missionary Baptist Church by Whittaker, who, according to video recorded from the church, had been pacing around the area for several hours. He supposedly took the bus, but then decided that he was just going to walk back. I don't understand how that happened, but that's what he was saying, that he was there, but then he got on the bus, and then he got off the bus, and we all know why he got off the bus, because he was following Aliana. At first, during his interrogation, he tried to deny knowing Aliana or that he did anything to her. He stated that he burglarized the same house Aliana was found in. They found his DNA semen inside of her, like I said, and they got a hit on the database because he had prior felons. They arrested him on February 2nd. And on February 3rd, he was being questioned, interrogation by police. But what Whittaker says, y'all, is disgusting. He said that Aliana practically undressed herself. The detectives asked him what was said at the crosswalk when he stopped Aliana. He said that he asked her what time was the bus coming, and then she told him. Then she turned around and walked the other direction. He said a couple days or so, sometime before this happened, he seen her one day walking back and forth in front of the store. So he automatically thought that she was a streetwalker, aka hooker. And that if he wasn't high on cocaine, he would have noticed she was a small girl going to school. Y'all, she had a school uniform on. She went to a preparatory private school. They have, you know, those little uniforms on. He states that he had an innocent conversation with her that day, that she went missing. He said that she asked him, oh, well, what are you going to go do now? And he said, I'm going to go get high. And she said, what's high mean? We know she knows what that is. This man is a liar. And he said that when he started to walk away, she followed him to the abandoned house on her own. He's just putting all the blame on this poor girl. He's scum. I'm sorry. I have to somehow say little comments because it just, we're all thinking it. One question about the black sweater that was cut off of her, he had no excuse. They also found a blue training bra at the scene and it was just left behind. Like, he took some stuff, like I guess her skirt and shirt and underwear. But he left other things, and he said it was because he was really freaked out and he couldn't believe that he did what he did, and he was trying to flee the scene as fast as he could. And he also said that she took her clothes off, but due to evidence, it shows that since there was blood on her tie and not on her bra, that she was beaten and her clothes were taken off by someone else. Christopher states that he doesn't remember what he did because he was so high and that he blacked out. I know, you can hear my sarcasm. There that day, he raped her. He used a Black & Decker drill, a Phillips head screwdriver, a nut driver, a box cutter, and a hammer to stab and beat this 14-year-old innocent girl to death who was minding her own business, trying to walk to school like the responsible child that she was. And this man just thought that he was entitled to just take this baby from the world. I'm going to try not to get upset. I already have tears starting to tear up. I'm just angry. I have 3 children of my own, and I would not know what to do if something happened. But I will tell y'all that I would probably try to go murder the person that would hurt my child. And I know her parents had to have felt this way too. And what's more disgusting is the next day after he murdered Aliana, Whittaker assisted a pastor at a church to unload food pantry items from a truck. And the pastor, when he was asked questions, he said that Whittaker's demeanor was calm and like nothing was wrong. Theories, there are none, because they caught the MF that did this. It was solved. The outcome from February 3rd, when he was arrested, like he told the investigators his story on what happened. He did, like I said, try to deny it first, but then he did finally come out and tell the truth. You know, his truth. At first, he tried to pin it on other people, 2 other guys that were the ones that took her and brought her to the house. He just went on and on and on, and the investigator's like, we have a problem with that, because inside the house, there were footprints. One set, remember? I told you, remember one set? It was like he walked through Aliana's blood and then tracked it around the house. And that's what the investigator told him. And then this MF wanted to actually look at the pictures. And he said, it's because I was high and didn't know what was going on, and I just wanted to see what I did. To me, he wanted to relive his doings. And that is the most gross thing ever. He was put in jail, charged with capital aggravated murder charges. He also was charged with a slew of other smaller charges. His first trial date was in February of 2018, a little over a year since he took Aliana from this world. The jury, on February 13th, 2018, found Christopher Whittaker guilty of capital aggravated murder, rape, third tier, because he had rape charges before, kidnapping, burglary, tampering with evidence, and gross abuse of a corpse. The jury did propose the death penalty, and the judge in court upheld it. Christopher is on death row right now, and also he got 48 years for the other charges. When I watched the first day of the trial, he seemed like he had no remorse, no emotion on his face, wasn't upset that he was there. I mean, his demeanor said it all. He was too worried about himself and was too scared of what people would think of him when they find out what he did. That's all he was worried about. Even in his own words, he said, "I don't want to be known as a monster. I'm not a monster." Well, actually, he is a monster, and he is a piece of shit. The first day of court, they did not get to the photos of Aliana, just the crime scene itself. Because this was a trial, they were thinking they would have a lot more days to finish the prosecutor's case and then go on to the defense case. But the defense already knew he did the crime, and Whittaker decided to take the stand the next day as his own witness, and he pleaded guilty. And he said his little spill and apology to the family, but his apology was so hollow, it just was eerie. I'm going to put in a clip of it. He said the reason he didn't want to go on with the trial was because he didn't want to put Aliana's family through this circus anymore. But you know what? The next day, when they were going to sentence him, whenever they decided to sentence him, reconvened, he already knew that the jury was considering the death penalty. So I really feel like he was doing that to save his own ass, because the defense pleaded with the judge to send Whittaker for life in prison. It wasn't really about giving the family peace. It was about his own selfish reasons. He has hurt many people in his life. He then also told police where they can find his boots and clothes he was wearing the day he kidnapped Aliana. The second day of the trial, where he got up and was his own witness and said all that and read an apology letter, the family went up for their victim impact statements. First, Aliana's stepmother went up, and she was just heartbroken, y'all. She didn't want to live. She said she had so much depression. She didn't know what to do with herself. She just couldn't come out of it. She said that her and Aliana were very close. They had a special bond. Her father and her stepmother started the Aliana DeFreeze Let's Make a Change Foundation. The foundation works to address the issues of abandoned homes, help children obtain safe routes to school, and address domestic violence, homelessness, and police-community relations. I think that's so awesome. I'll have some pictures up so y'all can see people gathering for celebration of life for Aliana. Also, in January 2019, Ohio governor signed into law the Aliana Alert Bill. After it passed the House of Representatives, the law requires schools to call parents within 120 minutes of the start of the day if their child is absent without the parents having previously notified the school. It went into effect in April 2019. And Aliana's mother also expressed an interest in having more police protect the streets. I think that is so awesome that they got that passed. To keep other children safe. To keep Aliana's name alive. Her grandmother Yvonne Day went next in the impact statements. Her grandmother on her mother's side. She had seen Whittaker around. And he even looked at her in a predatory way. That he just wanted someone, anyone. She was so angry that she lost her sweet grandbaby. She stated, "He messed with the wrong family." Her own mother went next and gave her statement. She could barely speak and was just struck by heart-shattering grief. She said she misses her every day. She also asked the judge to consider making Whittaker rot in prison, that he wasn't even good enough for death. But we already know that he got the death penalty. But you know how that goes. He'll be in prison for a while before he gets put to death. Her father went next, and I got pretty emotional when her father spoke. He told Whittaker that he better be glad he wasn't like he used to be when he was younger, or he would go at him in front of everyone in court. I don't blame her dad. Her father was so upset and stated, "It takes a real monster to take a child going happily to school." Her grandmother, father's side, could not make it to court, so she wrote a statement. She did say that she missed her so much and was devastated, but was really awesome to me that she said was she had dreams of Aliana smiling and telling her that she is okay now. I really do believe in this. I believe that Aliana visited her grandmother and wanted to show her that she was in a better place, she was with God, and that she was okay and she wasn't in pain anymore. I've had a similar dream like this happen to me before too, about a friend. The whole family and community were devastated. This monster is finally away behind bars. He cannot hurt anyone else. Even the judge seemed upset and was trying not to show her emotion, but you can hear the shake in her voice. She nailed him to the gurney straight to death. Some believed that he should have rotted in prison, but him keeping his life was just not justice enough. A couple years later, in 2019, the family did sue those for a wrongful death suit that who failed to protect Aliana that day. And they actually won $1 million. These are my own thoughts. I could say so much about this case. I could just ramble, but I'm going to try not to. My thoughts on this case has blown my mind. This thing of a human is just scum on the road. I just feel like he should have had a longer sentence. After he stabbed a woman in the neck and raped her, he was probably trying to kill that woman. She got very lucky that she survived, and 4 years for that? I don't know what Cleveland's doing. Where I'm from, you get 10 years for a little bit of drugs. Just, it's crazy. I really feel like if he got a longer sentence, he would have never crossed paths with this innocent baby. He would have never crossed paths with her. She would still be alive today. I feel like the justice system has failed the day he was only sentenced to 4 years for his first rape. I will say I am impressed with the Cleveland Police Department for the dedication and seriousness they took on Aliana's case. The police acted the right way. They went into gear really fast. Right when their feet hit the ground, they were running. And within not even 3 to 4 days, they arrested this mother and took him down. And I am so happy that this judge gave him the death sentence. And then on top of it, 48 years. I know it kind of sounds weird. You never know how long he's going to sit on death row. You never know if they overturn the death penalty in that state. And then he gets off of that. So I'm really happy that they at least gave him 48 years. If that's what he had to do, at least a long time in prison. The different ways of putting someone to death. Not just a little nap time death. That's how I see it. I know some people might not agree with me. But for monsters like him, yes, definitely. I promise I'm not cold hearted. But for these type of people, I am. And I also feel like the school failed them. They said that supposedly they did contact her, but you know how you get the automated school responses stating your kid is absent during the day? Well, they never got one. And they try to say, oh, it's because of the system had a malfunction. I know many creators don't like to talk about children. And a lot of them say it's because they can't handle it and they can't stomach it. That's one reason why I only post one video a month, because going through this, all the horrific things done, it really does hurt my heart and it bothers me. And so I try to kind of give myself some time in between research and everything to be able to give this case to y'all. And I really do feel like children, they deserve to be not forgotten. They deserve their story to be told. My last thing I'm going to say is, Aliana had such a beautiful smile. When I look at pictures of her, she was just the most beautiful little girl. My thoughts are with all of the people that loved her. Also at her school, her classmates planted a garden in Aliana's name. I just think that's so sweet. I'm not going to put the crime scene photos on this video because it was like a scene out of a horror movie. If you want to go look at them yourself, just Google it and there they are on Reddit. I'm just letting you know. This innocent girl never had a chance. We should always be aware of something that just doesn't feel right in your gut. You should definitely call the police, even if you feel like you might sound stupid or whatever. Definitely. Because you never know a little thing that you remember or noticed could completely solve a case. Thank you for being here with me today. Say a little prayer for Aliana's family and friends. Also, please go like and subscribe so you can be the first to know when I post next month again. I usually do my videos at the end of the month. Love y'all so much. I'll see y'all again soon.